The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Day number 2,922 since the Suns hosted a playoff or played in a playoff game. 417 weeks. That is 96 months. Today is the 8-year anniversary. Congratulations, Robert. You screwed this thing up. Nicely done. 8 years of no playoff basketball. But hey, DeAndre Ayton's coming, so it's got to turn around next year. If you watch the playoffs, if you watch the postseason, you really think this is a roster that's being built that's going to be able to compete next year in a postseason place? Hope I'm wrong, but for the last 8 years, we haven't had anything here. So I'm in a fine mood today on that. We have Albert Breer today on the show, MMQB, senior NFL writer. Peter King leaving the MMQB, what's going to happen there? His view of the Cardinals in the offseason. It's been a busy news cycle in the NFL. You have the anthem policy, you have the kickoff rule being changed. You have the leading with the helmet. So there's a bunch of NFL stuff to get to with Albert Breer. We have been pretty much away from football here for the last few weeks, thank goodness. But we'll dive back into some because there's some interesting storylines that are on that front. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, what are you doing here? Why have you been putting it off? Have you not checked into life insurance? Have you ever thought about life insurance? You've got to protect what matters. If something were to happen to you today, would they be protected? Go to Sagicor Now, get your free quote online, no waiting, no hassle. You can do it all online. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Albert Breer at 10:35. All right, so last night, I had a great weekend. Had all sorts of fun stuff going on the sports world. Got out yesterday and for two holes on golf, I was spectacular, amazing. And then for the last 16, I sucked. So it was fine. But last night, the Vegas nights, the story of the weekend, if we're just talking about sports, was Vegas. It was not what happened with Boston and Cleveland, and it was not what happened with Golden State and Houston. The sports story of the weekend. When I say sports story, give me something different. Give me something new. Give me a championship series. A championship series of the entire league, not of just a conference. And while I am a fan of basketball, I played basketball, I like being around basketball, I love seeing good pro basketball, and I haven't seen any for 2,922 days. So last night I'm trying to sit there and watch Houston attempt to shoot three-pointers. When you're 7 of 44 from three-point country in a championship game, I can't make these numbers up, guys. This is not an exaggeration. 7 for 44. I'm on social last night, and I did the whole NHL, Vegas, Washington, greater than symbol than the NBA, and I get this, oh, you're hating on our league. No, I'm not. I'm a fan of sport. I'm a fan of good sport. Last night, oh, hockey's boring. No, there's no scoring there. They had 10 goals last night. They had a show to start. they had a pregame show that really set the tone. I think as I was watching it, I was with my wife. I was with my 23-year-old daughter. She's a huge sports fan. All of her millennial friends are on social. And they're all going gaga over the pregame show, the introductory lineup. Last night, the NHL sent a message to the NFL and to Major League Baseball and to the NBA and to the MLS that we're Vegas. And when we do a production for a pregame show, it's not pulling out a tarp and having players run out through just some smoke and having some fire go up in the air and that's it. No. If you didn't see it, I'm sure it's up on YouTube today. Eric, did you dive in on the pregame show last night?
Of course. I was so into it for the first 39 minutes, and then I completely lost interest.
In the pregame show?
Yeah.
Or the game?
No, the pregame show.
It was too long? When Michael Buffer came out, that was too long?
That was expected. Yeah. But the pregame show was, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised because it is Vegas.
It was awesome.
I didn't think it was all. I thought it was cool, and I thought it ran way too long. I was just like,
"What is your problem? Well, you're no fun. These people pay money."
This is my problem. I turned on NBC at 5 o'clock. They didn't start playing hockey until like 5:27. Like,
yeah.
That, like, if you're doing your pregame show from 4 until 5,
yeah,
and they're supposed to drop the puck at around 5:05, 5:04, right, and it's almost 5:30, and we're just waiting on
what
this?
What were you waiting on? They had the drum line. Those guys were cool.
Well, I was partly waiting on the fact that I'd like the game to start closer to 5 because I knew there'd be an NBA game on at 6 that I'd like to flip over to from time to time.
Yeah, the NBA game, you go to that for the last 4 minutes and you're there, right?
Not for the NBA playoffs.
Were you
there
back and forth? Were you back and forth?
Mostly hockey. Watched almost the entire hockey game.
So I'm with a 23-year-old millennial, and she wanted to be on hockey more than she wanted to be on basketball.
Not surprising.
Because the basketball game, the Warriors-Rockets game, aesthetically, was not pretty.
No.
At all.
And last night, I think, Brad, was a huge win for the NHL, because I'm not a huge NHL fan, and I love the fact that there were so many goals and there was so much excitement, and it was like you were on your edge. I was on the edge of the seat, my seat, for two teams that really I don't care.
Yeah, you don't have any fight.
No.
Dog in fight. Either did I. I didn't have any dog.
I mean,
in
look
fight
at those uniforms. How can you not like the Vegas Golden Knights?
Vegas. They're not even loss. The loss is gone.
And they're just a bunch of guys. So you root for teams like that.
They're a bunch of guys
with a great goaltender and a really good coach.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, the as the game progressed, the wide open brand of skating, Eric, that's what I liked about it, which clearly favored Vegas. Washington wants to sit there and mix it up and slow it down, and Vegas was wide open. How many times were their goals? There could have been, I don't know, 12, 13 goals scored in last night's game. When it gets to the Stanley Cup, I'm into it, but this was a crossover effect. The entertainment value of Vegas and the way that they put this show together to start out, it was captivating. It really was. And I don't know what they can do to top it. Like, I didn't need to see Little John at halftime. I really didn't need to see that. There was a little too much Vegas. Even Michael Buffer, the Let's Get Ready to Rumble thing, ASU tried that earlier this year. They flew him in. They had a contact. They brought Michael Buffer down against the U of A, and what happened? ASU got whacked.
Just remember, there's no halftime in hockey. It's called an intermission.
It's an intermission.
And there's no quarters. It's periods.
It's intermission. What did I say? Did I say quarters or
you
periods?
Said halftime.
Okay, my bad.
There's no halftime.
What did I say? I don't know why I said that. In the NBA, the halftime. In the intermission, between the first and second intermission, first and second period, Lil Jon shows up. Why do I care about Lil Jon? I don't care about Lil Jon. So are you going to have Blue Man Group come out? Are we going to have the bad Elvis impersonator in game number two? Like, what possibly could Vegas roll out? But if you're a fan of the sport, it was a win, other than the NBA East Western Conference Finals were on opposite of it. And so because of that, I'm sure the number, when it comes out today, will not be as great as it should be. And this is why numbers don't count, in my view. I watched. I was entertained. I don't need to know what some number of some little electronic device said more people were watching. Doesn't matter to me. Doesn't take into account sports bars and all that stuff. I was thoroughly entertained. It was terrific. There is supposed to be a press conference today here in the Valley at noon involving Arizona State baseball and their current skipper, Tracy Smith. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the show. It would seem to me, because Ray Anderson is speaking and the fact that this was released on Friday, and nowhere has it been put out that Tracy Smith has been fired, that he's not going to be fired. He might decide to resign or walk away. Maybe he told Ray, look, this hasn't worked out. Let's keep it under wraps. But when you have players and you have recruiting and just the baseball circuit in general, I would be surprised, I guess, if Tracy Smith walked away today. There was an event earlier this month, and Andre Ethier was at the event. And ASU has been asking Andre Ethier for a substantial donation. And I had three big cigars that told me about this instance that happened at this event. Andre showed up wearing a hat that said, make ASU baseball great again. And he was kindly asked by someone with ASU athletics to please remove the hat, that it was uncomfortable. Well, guess what? If they're trying to get a donation out of him, it doesn't matter if Andre Ethier has a hat on top of his head. He wants to see things be great again. You know, to me, Willie Bloomquist is sitting out there. Andre Ethier is sitting out there. Andy Stankiewicz has done a terrific job over at GCU. there's no shortage of candidates if they decide to replace Tracy Smith today at noon. However, the stance I've taken is whenever you decide to write a check to have somebody go away, it's not a good thing. When Todd Graham, it was very clear, and I had somebody at ASU say to me last week, oh, you got what you wanted Todd fired. I never once said that Todd should be fired. I said he's going to be fired. There's a big difference. Every corner of the university, other than the people that are trying to protect him and spin it, he was going to be fired. Big difference. I never once said he should be. It was he's going to be. So when you have 3 years left on your deal, as Tracy does, that's not good for an athletic department. I know they're swimming in gobs of dough. I got it. But you wait a year, much like Todd Graham, and that was about it. Pull the plug, say see you later. I have not been at Arizona State baseball this season. I've seen a lot of their games on the Pac-12 network. I'm one of the five that subscribe to the Pac-12 network. So I've seen them drop balls. I've seen them play sloppy against the U of A. I've just seen bad baseball. And can you make the case that he should be replaced at this point? Sure. But those that want him replaced are the usual suspect. They're the people that will go back and say, well, this would have never happened under Bobby Winkles, and this would have never happened under Jim Brock. They're that group of people. They've always been there. And I don't know how to tell you guys this. Bobby Winkles isn't walking through the door. Jim Brock's not walking through the door. When you decide, when you start to put things up, it's like saying this needs to be like how Frank Kush ran it just because you grew up with that. That doesn't work in this day and age. It doesn't. It may sound good. It may feel good. That doesn't work. And so when the easy side is, well, just blow them out and go get somebody else. Not that simple. Not that eating 3 years on a deal, that's not good. And so if Andre Ethier or Willie Bloomquist go chase Andy Stankiewicz, there's plenty of quality guys that are out there. And if you want the whole, it's got to be a Sun Devil, it doesn't have to be a Sun Devil. It doesn't. I think that's misguided. Well, if they're not tied into the university, please spare me on that, okay? You find the best quality candidate. All right, on the other side, we are going to talk about the NBA playoffs and maybe a little bit further about today's anniversary for Robert Sarver. It's a big day. Big day. 8 years, 2,922 days since the owner of our team, our proud, proud basketball team, had a playoff game involving his franchise. But he's making gobs of dough. We'll talk about that a little bit too. Sports360AZ.com. It's an interesting story about Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward I want to get to as well. That's next. In about 15 minutes, Albert Breer with the MMQB will be with us. Anthem protests, this idea that players are considering sitting out the regular season until Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick are reinstated. It's ludicrous, but I will get Albert's view on that. Also, the changes in the kickoff rule, linemen leading with crowns, and the Cardinals. We'll get into all that with one of the best in the business in the MMQB world, Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter. That comes up at 10:35. Yesterday, so the NBA finals, let's go back. The finals are set. It's Cleveland and Golden State. We're not surprised by this. Let's go back to the Cleveland-Boston game, game number 7. And LeBron was really good again. He was terrific. We've gotten into this space where let's argue over if it's Kobe or if it's MJ or if it's LeBron. And I guess that's fine if you want to just sit there and argue pointlessly over something that can never be settled. And anybody who decides that any of the three of those players isn't any good for any certain reason, that's on you. I mean, I just see greatness and I learn to love greatness. And that's about it for me. I can't be one of those people that's going to sit there and go on and on and on about how MJ would do this and LeBron would do that and Kobe could do this. All I know is all three have the great advantage of being a villain. Sports needs villains, A. That means they walk into your building and you hate on them. And if they're on your team, you love them. And that's fine. If you're going to, the paying public goes, I don't go to root. I don't care who wins. I never have. I never will. I go to see competitive greatness. And when I see competitive greatness and I see that LeBron James did not have Kevin Love with him and he has a group of players alongside of him that's kind of like, who are these guys? I mean, you know them by name, but really they're not going to go anywhere unless he's able to show up and do something. And so watching him against Boston just wasn't ready yet. It's going to be that way for the Suns, maybe in 2030 or 2035. I don't know. The Suns will finally figure out how to get out of the ditch. And when they do, the first year, it'll be all excitement and they'll wave white towels and they may win in the first round. The second round, they'll get eliminated. And then they get into the second round, into the third round, and it's great. And then they lose in the third round, and then they get to about the fourth year being together, and they get to the finals, and then they either win or lose. That's how teams are built in the NBA. Very seldom do you just go add a couple of guys, a couple of pieces. Remember, Boston stunk a few years ago. They weren't good. And fortunately, the Brooklyn Nets came along and had sucker written all over their face and made deals for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and put them in a great position to draft players. Danny Ainge just came in and swooped in like a hawk and plucked their eyeballs out, and Brooklyn still stinks, and Boston was able to turn around and become a very good team. Cleveland had LeBron James, and they can subtract Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James gets back to the NBA Finals. It's terrific what he's been able to do. It has been fun. I am one of those that really enjoy watching him go out and play his ass off and play so hard on both ends of the court. I marvel at his physical condition. I never once say, well, if he was doing this against MJ and Kobe, because guess what? He can't. They're retired. They don't play anymore. So when you do these aimless, mindless arguments, it means nothing. It's white noise. It doesn't blue dot blue wall. I enjoy watching him play. Now, Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward were not at Game 7 at the Boston Celtics, Game 7 on their bench. They were not there even in the building. Kyrie Irving had a nasal septum surgery, so he missed Game 7. According to his agent, couldn't fly, couldn't be there. Now, in Boston, this doesn't play well. This just doesn't play well. Gordon Hayward, not there, doesn't play well. Two guys that are supposedly the cornerstones, and in sports we're taught that no matter what, you're there alongside your teammate. You're hurt, you're still there. The idea that Boston and Danny Ainge had to talk about this yesterday, are you going to trade Kyrie because you got all the way to the finals? Are you going to get rid of Gordon Hayward because you got all the way to the finals? I don't know where you can come up with those ideas and those thoughts and those conclusions, but I do think it's fair to criticize Kyrie Irving. I do. Look, you can get your deviated septum surgery done 2 months, 2 weeks, the day after. If the finals, if it doesn't go our way, wake up the next morning and say, go get the surgery scheduled the next week. I'll get it done. His agent said, of course the agent said, he probably didn't want to be out in public because he probably didn't want to show how beat up his face looked from having the surgery. That sounds good. That's agent speak for protecting the client. I get it. But I would certainly not accept that. And I don't care who it is. I'm trying to think with the Suns. Were the Suns ever in a space where guys just took off when they were winning and when they were really good? Like Nash didn't just disappear and his nose looked pretty bad. Rajah Bell didn't disappear. He was suspended, and he went and sat across the street from the arena when they were playing the Lakers and watched the game on a TV. He couldn't be in the building. That, to me, is bogus. So that part bugs me. Boston just wasn't ready. Jason Tatum was – there's a shot of him online where he's wearing, like, his sixth-grade club jersey the first year that LeBron made it to the finals. So then Jason Tatum is trying to guard LeBron James in a game seven. That's not going to work. That's just not going to work. In terms of the Golden State side of things, so Steve Kerr decided to use the Hack a Capella idea last night. He used Hack a Shaq. Very smart on Steve Kerr's part. Fans hate it. I'm sure Adam Silver wasn't happy with it. Steve Kerr is becoming the modern day Greg Popovich. Pop has gone off to the side. Pop has gone through some really tough personal stuff and losing his wife. Spurs had a tough year. Kawhi Leonard, all that. So he's not around. So Steve Kerr is the one that's talking about gun control and talking about the anthem protests and how stupid the NFL is and all those sorts of things. And he's also the one that put the Hack-a-Shaq into the Western Conference Finals with about 2.5 minutes to go. I'm gonna throw out Draymond Green. He's going to go hug Capella. Capella's going to make 1-for-2 free throws. We're fine with that. We're going to ice the game. And that's exactly what they did. Very smart coaching. Even though I'm not a fan of that strategy, It's in the game, and there's nothing you can do to legislate it out. The other side of it is, what's Mike D'Antoni's legacy here? It's not like he's going away tomorrow. But when we see Mike D'Antoni and his coaching style, I liked Mike a lot here in Phoenix. It was a lot of fun. But fun is one thing. Winning championships is another. And they weren't able to do that. So here they are in Houston with supposedly the MVP of this year's season. I say supposedly. James Harden is going to be voted the MVP. But in watching James Harden here in the postseason, if you're to think that James Harden is the most valuable player over LeBron James, you're simply kidding yourself. You really are. Or you're at Arizona State and you're on the payroll. I got it. You're always going to root. And you're just going to see things maroon and gold. Got it. Understand. It's a great way to make a living. James Harden was not good again last night. An MVP in a game 7 does not go 12 of 29. Does not turn balls over repeatedly. Yeah, I get it. He did not have Chris Paul out there with him. But just looking at James Harden here in the series, he was not the most valuable player. LeBron James is not even close. Not even close. And if you look at how Houston was built, they're built as a regular season team. There's teams that can go out and win 50 or 60 games in a year. We don't have one here in Phoenix, and we haven't had one in 2,922 days, 417 weeks, 96 months, 8 years. We haven't had that. It's fine to go out in the regular season, and if you're James Harden, to bomb away from downtown, or Eric Gordon was real good. But when it comes to a game 7 and you go 7 of 44 and you have nothing else that you can do, like Chris Webber and Reggie Miller and Marv Albert were just kind of befuddled with, there's nothing else they can do. They don't have a point guard. They don't really have an inside game, though the pick and roll to Capella worked some. You're going to let Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker shoot threes? Knock yourself out. You're going to lose. And so we're back to Golden State and Cleveland again. If I had to choose, if Golden State and Cleveland are playing, or the Washington Capitals and the Vegas Knights are playing, I'm starting on Vegas and Washington. I'm far more interested in what is going on that side of the championship space, the Stanley Cup, than seeing the Cavs and the Warriors go at it again. And I don't even think this Cavs team outside of LeBron is that good compared to last year. They're just not. Andre Iguodala not playing, I think that's a big deal. I think that's why Houston struggled. He is a very important player to them. And I don't know if he's going to play in the next round or not. But both championship series were grinded out. Not the most aesthetically pleasing. If you're a basketball fan, I'm completely wrong in your view, and it's fine. Me being a consumer of sports, and I talk about sports, I've watched sports for 30 years, it wasn't even close last night. Stanley Cup was far more interesting and entertaining than what was going on with Houston and Golden State. Albert Breer is next. Stay with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Fox Sports Arizona carries the show 16 times per week. We appreciate the partnership with FSAZ. Let's talk some NFL for a couple of minutes. Albert Breer, the MMQB, senior NFL reporter at the Monday Morning Quarterback in a busy offseason. How are you, Albert?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good to have you on. Doing great. Doing great. Thanks. Let's just start right off the top. Peter King has been a weekly guest of ours through the years, and he's leaving the MMQB. Wrote some very nice things going out the door. I know he's not going away in terms of just seeing him day to day, but your thoughts, Albert, on Peter leaving?
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic to work with. You know, I've told him this privately, and I've said it publicly. You know, I started reading him when I was a teenager, and I've been lucky enough to work with some people, really over the last 15 years that I grew up reading or I grew up watching Rich Eisen at NFL Network, Dan Shaughnessy, and Bob Ryan at the Boston Globe, and Peter's certainly one of those guys that I grew up reading, and you know, he gave me a great opportunity 2 years ago, great opportunity to kind of be part of building something. And the reality of working with him the last 2 years has been better than I would have imagined. So, yeah, I got nothing but good things to say about Peter, and I know he'll be great, you know, at NBC the same way he was at SI.
Are you changing what you're doing there now at MMQB? Are you still the senior NFL yeah. reporter, or what's, I mean, what's happening now?
Things will change, obviously, a little bit. You know, he made an enormous impact at SI, and so obviously, there's some blanks that are going to need to be filled in there, and that's going to be evolving over the next few weeks.
Good stuff there, Albert Breer with us, the MMQB. Okay, so we have three big items, ticket items, I think, to go through: the anthem policy, the kickoff rule, the linemen leading with the crowns of helmets. It's been a busy off season. Which one of those three, or if you were to rank them in order of importance from your point of view in the NFL news cycle, Albert?
Oh, the anthem policy is, I guess, socially the most newsworthy. It's going to, I think, affect the way that we cover the game in September. That will be at the top. I think for a lot of players, it's obviously, an issue that they're very, emotionally invested in. And so, the way that that evolves over the next few months, I think it's going to be really interesting. The way the NFL teams handle it team by team, I think, is going to be really interesting. It's a very rich subject. There's a lot there, and there's a lot to dig through. After that, I'd say the kickoff is probably, I would say the kickoff is probably more significant than the targeting rule. The only reason I would say that at this point, at least, is because this feels a little bit like a last ditch effort to save the play itself, and the play might be coming out of the game, where the targeting rule is sort of just a continuation of where the game's been going for some time. The hope, I know, on the part of the special teams coaches that were involved in writing that rule is that they will find a way to save the play, and that this will create less high-end collisions, that this will make it a more exciting play, but this will actually lead to more returns, and more returns in a safer way. And so, one way or another, that's going to have a big impact on football. If it saves it, then it saves the kickoff, and that's a big deal. If it doesn't, then the kickoff's coming out of the game, and that's a big deal too. The targeting rule, to me, I don't think it really changes the way the coaches are teaching the game, because nobody's taught anyone to spear, in any recent times at the NFL level. And so it's not like that's, going to change the way the coaches teach. I think the biggest question is going to be enforcement, there are so many, areas where, the helmet does come into play. How are they going to enforce it? It's going to be like holding, where, you see some stuff let go. And then on the other level of it, how are you going to separate with the 15-yard penalty from what's going to be an ejectionable offense? So that's the part that I think is going to be, a big news story of the first few weeks of the season. And I think, we're probably looking at maybe a 4, 6, 8 week period where even the officials themselves are trying to figure it out.
Mm. Following back on the anthem, the story over the weekend that several star NFL players are considering sitting out the regular season because of Reed and Kaepernick not being on teams. Is there substance to that? Do you buy into that, or is this just a handful of players?
Yeah, I wouldn't believe everything you read. Look, I know, again, there are a lot of players that are really emotionally invested in this. I would caution everyone that, I think it's very, very difficult to galvanize a group of 2,000 players. It's different than baseball. It's different than basketball, because guys aren't on guaranteed contracts. The average career length is much shorter. And by definition, professional football players, are more replaceable than professional baseball players or professional basketball players. You can see that the way that the rosters churn, over the course of a year, and how many guys are on and off the roster over the course of a typical year. And you're asking guys to put their careers on the line. And the truth is that, if you want to go back to 2011, they couldn't galvanize the group to miss a single game, and that was doing it for themselves. Mm-hmm. That would have been the fight in the CBA negotiations in 2011. And they're actually working now towards 2021 and trying to come up with a way where players will be willing to sit out games where they can galvanize the group. And so, I mean, they wouldn't do that for themselves. It's just, it's almost impossible for me to imagine that anybody would seriously consider doing that for someone else, you know? And that's just, it's just a logical way of looking at it. Again, I'm not saying other players don't care about it. It's just, it's very, very difficult to envision a scenario where anything like that comes close to happening.
Yeah, and in 30 years of me covering NFL or being around NFL out here with San Diego and here in Arizona, I just saw that story, kind of shook my head and say, that's not happening. But you're more in tune than I am on that. Before I let you go, Albert, on the subject of the Arizona Cardinals, so Vegas has them as a 5-6 win team this coming season. Everybody's expecting Sam Bradford to be grabbing his knee by week one or week two, and Josh Rosen gets thrown to the Wolves. How long can Fitz hang in there? David Johnson comes back. No more Tyrann Mathieu. A lot of moving parts here in Arizona and not a lot of expectations nationally. What's your view of what's going on out here in the offseason?
Well, you know, I think it's really going to have to be what it was going to be last year. You know, and I think the goal for last year was getting to a point where the team would be built a little bit differently. The David Johnson injury really firebombed that, you know, but I think the idea was that they were going to become kind of more similar in the run game and their defense. They were going to play football a different way. And then David Johnson gets hurt. And, you know, there was the one flash with Adrian Peterson when he got on the roster. But for the most part, it was very difficult to employ that formula when they didn't have that major piece in place. And so, you know, I think that the idea now is to try to get back to what that was going to be, where, you know, they're able to win games on defense and they're able to win games at their running game. And I'm not saying you minimize the quarterback, but you sort of put a little bit less on his shoulders. That works for Sam Bradford. You know, that would be good for Sam Bradford. That would be even better for a rookie quarterback. Mm-hmm. And if you want to look at the quarterbacks that have won in the past as rookies, you go all the way back to Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco in 2008. That's the formula that works. And so, you know, my view of the Cardinals is if they can run the ball effectively, and it sounds really old school and outdated, but if they can run the ball effectively and if they can play really good defense, and they've got some good pieces in Chandler Jones and Reddick and Peterson, you know, if those things can come together, then they can play a brand of football that I think will just keep them competitive. I don't think they're in any sort of championship window now, but, you know, I think that they have the pieces in place where if things break right, they can employ the formula that they mentioned that they were trying to employ last year, be competitive on a week-to-week basis, and ultimately, you know, create, I think, what will be close to an ideal environment to play a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, it's a really tough division, but great insight there in terms of what they have. People talk so much on the offensive side, but they're not really looking at. There's a good core defensively over here.
Yeah.
And this needs to be polished up. As always, I appreciate your time and your insight, Albert. Enjoy your offseason. Thanks.
You got it. Thank you.
There's Albert Breer with us, the MMQB, senior NFL reporter. At the MMQB, MMQB.com, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. A few other things on this Tuesday before we get out of here. The Suns are having their pre-draft workouts, not for the number one overall pick, obviously, because Cody Justice and Shannon Evans are showing up today. No offense to Cody and Shannon. You guys know they're just not number one picks, but they're down there today. The Diamondbacks, so... The thing with the Diamondbacks, from my point of view, is if you go back over the last 2.5-3 weeks, you'll see that their schedule was littered and loaded with the Dodgers and Astros and Nationals. Teams are very, very good. Four teams are scuffling, like the Dodgers have been scuffling without Kershaw, but they're still a good team. And they're going to come around at some point in time. They still had some talented players on there. The weekend was lost in that they dropped 2 of 3 to Oakland. Oakland's not a great team. The hitting struggles continue. This is a pretty big week from my view of where things are with the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have a couple of more games against Cincinnati, who's horrible. And then they have a weekend with Miami, who's not good either. And then they jump right back into Colorado and the Giants. And yeah, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. They've fallen out of first place, but they're not in last place. They're just kind of circling around. Pretty clear to me the pitching has been, for the most part, good enough to win. Greinke was good enough to win the other day. He really was. A guy who's not been good enough to win is on the mound tonight. Lately, Zach Godley, it feels like it's batting practice when he's out on the field. It just doesn't feel like he's the pitcher that he once was. And so you have a team in Cincinnati who yesterday, the Diamondbacks put up a season-high 12 runs, but the Reds threw around the ball for three errors, and the Reds left 11 guys on base. They are not good. So go out and take care of business, at least get two of three out of the way, or sweep them two of three against Miami. If not, you're probably going to get a phone call from outside of Denver. I think in Breckenridge is where Kent Kendrick lives in the summertime. The phone call is going to come. At some point, he is not going to be pleased with what is happening down here, and they're not getting out of the free fall. Just because the last 3 weeks have not been good at all, I'm not excusing it away, and Goldschmidt has not been good at all. And there should be concern about that. Ken, to his credit, has not been the meddling owner, at least from what I've heard, in the last few years. He's left these guys alone to do their thing, and he realizes that it is a long, long stretch. Look, we're not even to May 31st yet. So Memorial Day weekend has come. You guys know this, you listen for any point in time, that the benchmark for seasons goes Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, and then into the postseason. And so as bad as it's been, this should be a good week. It really should. There's no excuse for it. And the best story going locally right now, no offense to Diamondbacks or the Suns bringing in guys or the Cardinals going through OTAs. What's going on with Arizona State softball is pretty cool. It's a pretty darn good little story. And in the grand scheme of things, it's a college softball team. Okay? But they're playing their hearts out. They're playing well. They're fun to watch. They're going to the College World Series. Anytime a team goes to the World Series on the collegiate front, baseball or softball, big freaking deal. It's a big deal. And so this week they play Oregon. They play on Thursday. On Thursday, Jeff Munn will be sitting in this chair. And I know that Jeff is very, very passionate about what's going on at Arizona State. Does a great job with Charlie Turner-Thorne, the women's basketball, all that. I'm sure he'll have plenty on what's going on with them. Jordan Hamm will be sitting in the seat tomorrow. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He's the Iron Man. He sits in his seat most every single day. And Eric Sorensen is always senior executive vice president of everything or nothing, depending on the day. Enjoy your Tuesday.